I created a prototype, basically kind of forked the project. I re-implemented it from scratch with code splitting as feature, and this was the birthday of Webpack.
That's Tobias Koppers, maintainer of Webpack, and this is the Rebe Podcast, a podcast that takes a peek behind the curtain at some of the most impactful open source projects and the developers who make them happen. I'm B. Dougie, a.k.a. Brian Douglas.
And I'm Kathy Korovec.
In every episode, Kathy and I invite a maintainer or open source developer into our studio to explore their work, their story, and where those two meet.
In this episode, we speak with Tobias, whose project Webpack is used by developers all over the world. An open source JavaScript module bundler, Webpack allows front-end developers to use a modular approach for their web application development purposes, taking all of the code from the application and making it usable in the browser. Tobias started working on modules WebMake, and it wasn't offering the features he needed. So he built Webpack, and people from all over the world started contributing. Soon enough, sites as well-traversed as Instagram spoke of using Webpack, and it took off. We spoke with Tobias about the process of building Webpack, how he got support for it, and where he sees his role within it, while also balancing a new full-time job. Here, Tobias shares the origin story of Webpack.
It started with, at the time I was studying, so because of my computer science study included some kind of Java and basic programming languages. And we also did a lot of project, of course, and I did a project with Google Web Toolkit, some kind of Java to JavaScript compiler for the web. It has a nice feature, which was code splitting, which allows you to split a part of your application into a separate build thing that is then loaded on demand on the web page. Probably because Java created a huge JavaScript bundles. Anyway, I like this feature. And later, during my master thesis, I did a web application, and I was looking for some kind of optimizer for web applications or kind of tool to build my web application. And I didn't found a lot. The only tool I found was Modules WebMake, but it was kind of lacking regards of code splitting because I like code splitting from GWT, from Google Web Toolkit. And so I created an issue and proposed this feature, kind of code splitting to this tool, to Modules WebMake. Yet generally, it was the maintainer liked it, but he didn't want to add it to the tool. And so I created a prototype, basically kind of forked the project. I re-implemented it from scratch with code splitting as feature. And this was the birthday of Webpack, basically. So the prototype evolved into a separate module. I renamed it to Modules Webpack at this time. And yeah, it started then as its own project and continued a lot. I had some early users which were interested and wrote a lot of issues. So I basically talked with them a lot on GitHub and implemented features, improved it. At this time, my master thesis was done, so that was not my motivation in improving it. More like I was had fun implementing that and talking with the people and implementing features they like, and was happy that they liked the product or the open source thing.
Webpack's official release date was March 10th, 2012, and its impact cannot be underestimated. Code splitting does exactly what it says, splits the code into various bundles, thereby streamlining it and allowing for everything to move much more quickly. And like so many open source projects, Webpack was born out of a problem Tobias saw and an effective way of solving it.
As you discover new things, like building on what already exists is always a good way to sort of approach a problem, or acknowledging that things exist is a good way to start moving to the next direction of what the future of the web is. And I would say, like, for Webpack, me being a Webpack user for years, it was something that completely changed my thinking of how I approach bundling stuff and leveraging other tools like Babel and even some of the modern stuff like JSX and React. So, like, my question is, like, as you were approaching this problem, did you take any sort of existing examples or ideas and thoughts from web tools like Browserify or Gulp or Grunt?
Obviously from Modules WebMake, which was where I did the issue. I later discovered Bozify and Require.js because at this time I didn't know about them. And if I would have known about that, I probably would have used them. But I think I just Googled too few stuff. So yeah, I wasn't into web development at this time. So it's more like, yeah, studying this project and didn't know anything about it. Yeah, so... of course, all the other tools inspired Webpack. I think it's also a good thing in open source that you can and you're allowed, and it's not bad to copy or being inspired by other tools around and maybe solving their problems a little bit different and continuous evolving. And I also think that many other tools being inspired by Webpack, so it's a take and give.
It's the foundation of open source. Being able to give and take, but also build new resources for people to create the foundation for their products. Brian and Tobias discuss code splitting as something that's built into new frameworks like Remix and Next.js. Because of this, you no longer need to think of incremental static regeneration, but you could build a certain portion of the site on demand. Did Tobias feel like the approach that Webpack had to basically bring code splitting and bundling to the masses impact where we are today with the modern web?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think at this time where Webpack was created, it was too early and it wasn't really needed for people to have code splitting. So I think Webpack was pretty early in doing something like that. But I think it was also the right direction because it influenced and everything moved towards bigger applications and moving towards the need for code splitting. So I think that was one of the success factors of Webpack, that we had this feature very early and it pretty much was majored in Webpack years before us, before it got mainstream. Or maybe it got mainstream because of Webpack, or I don't know. Code splitting was then got mainstream because applications grow a lot and got bigger and bigger and more moved to client-side. And I think that created the need for code splitting.
But speaking of mainstream now, like I know a bit of the Webpack story and how it sort of took off a bit. And I know a lot of the help came from the React community as it was sort of up and coming. I'd love to hear your take on that from your angle of the React team eventually finding out about Webpack and sort of how it took off from their engagement and also promotion.
The biggest promotion for Webpack in the early days was Pete Hunt on OSCON basically did a talk about how Instagram.com works, and he basically did a lot of what existing tools have for features. And at the end, they used Webpack and helped them to solve all the issues. Basically, the most pressing issue was code splitting, and most motivating issue is also, I think that the other point was that Webpack, it wasn't intentionally for me, but it had the idea about everything is a module. So basically, not only JavaScript, but also style sheets, HTML templates were modules in Webpack. So this was also, I think, one key point of them using Webpack. So to integrate everything, the whole application into a single dependency graph, and to be able to, if you delete this JavaScript file or load this JavaScript file on demand, it will also load the dependent style sheets on demand and assets on demand and all the things. And everything is connected in a big graph. I think also at this time, React was created for Instagram.com. So it's basically both involved at the same time. And I think they all worked great together and solved similar problems about components and building your application about in pieces or thinking in components and modularizing your application.
Because of the success of Instagram and how many people mirror its architecture and solutions, Webpack has found mass adoption. It also points to something so special. Open source software is the backbone of more than many may realize. And while Webpack is successful, its team remains fairly compact, about 20 people. So to remain strong and afloat, it has taken on sponsorships from large companies. And we wondered how Tobias approached getting sponsorships through Open Collective.
So basically, it was at a time where Sean Locking joined Webpack. He basically joined with the idea that he wanted to get us funded and want to make a team and get us organized, basically. And he started that we getting a core team and is joining Open Collective and also joining the JS Foundation, and did a lot of talks about Webpack and motivated companies to start sponsoring. And I think it was pretty unusual to sponsor open source project at this time. At least it was not mainstream. It's more like very exceptional. So I don't know what he did, but he did a good job on getting luring the companies into sponsoring Webpack. And I also think that it was very important for Webpack because of the sponsorship, I was able to do it full time and we were able to fund a lot of other contributors. And I don't know exactly, but I think that many contributors staying or could afford that they could contribute to Webpack because of repaying our contributors. So I always want to make it that contributing to Webpack is not a lost game. So you do a lot of invest a lot of time, but you don't get paid for this time or don't have anything else for this time. So it should be at least it's not super well paid, but it's at least something you can live with, and it's not wasted time. Or I don't want to dismotivate people by not getting anything about it.
Well, actually, there's something that's a correlation I've seen a lot with projects where you write some code, people start leveraging it. It either takes off or just sort of sits there. Like one of the you only have two paths, but. The Webpack project, it got adoption and you saw some success there. And Sean came in as, I guess, could you attribute him to be the visionary or the operations person to be able to sort of have that connection to Open Collective and to get into all these conferences and meetups in the US? I'm curious, like, do you see that, the correlation of like being able to have someone to do the non-technical work for the project and do you find success from that?
For our project, it's definitely some kind of success because John did a lot of public relation stuff and I did a lot of maintaining stuff. And I think it worked good together because he was good at public relation. He did some job related to that before that. And I was not good at public relation and not good at talking. And so it's more like I'm more the technical person behind that. And so I think it worked out pretty well. And we had also some other people that did a lot of documentation stuff that was very good because I'm also bad at documentation.
It's good to be self-aware and know where limitations lie because it sounds like that's a great way to have other people step up in places where you know that you might not have the expertise in. And it sounds like Sean did that well for you as well as other folks. Actually, it's funny because Webpack is it's a project that I've leveraged a lot, but I've also interacted with folks who've contributed there.
Open source and the community go hand in hand. It's people coming together to make something stronger. And for contributors, it's often the start of a long journey. In regards to Webpack, contributors brought such a diverse skill set to the project, filling in gaps where others may not have been able to. It's certainly one of the successes of Webpack, the combination and abilities brought to the table. What does Tobias attribute the success of Webpack to? It wasn't the first modular builder, so what was the thing that got the community attached to this?
I can't say exactly, but I think top three success factors were code splitting, to have everything as a module, so a combined module graph of all resources. And also the third factor, I think, was the flexibility. So it's Webpack is very extensible and it's basically written with the intent that every user, every company has a special case and will be able to customize Webpack really heavily. So it's, I think, but I can't have no proof, but I think that the flexibility of Webpack was one of the success factors, especially as the JavaScript ecosystem was very in flux at this time. It's not that much settled on what is the right approach about everything. And I'm not sure if it's settled now, but it's at least more settled than like 5 years ago. And so I think that the flexibility and the extensibility of Webpack was also one success factor.
Yeah. Would you say that JavaScript is a mature language now at this point?
I don't think so. It's more like, I think it's still in development. It's not immature. It's more like it's continuing to evolve and it's getting better over time. I think JavaScript is a really difficult language to evolve and to develop because it's more like you have to be backward compatible to everything in the web, and it's not like other languages which can do breaking changes like Python 3 or something like that, where you can change things which would break and can involve the language really easily because you can do so small breaking changes. But in JavaScript, it's more more difficult to involve. But I think we're doing a good job, like the recent ECMAScript versions. Yeah, I think they improved a lot and it's moving into the right direction.
A lot of the stuff that's been happening on the web and its ability to advance is thanks to projects like Webpack. And because of the funding, Tobias has been able to work on this project for the past 2 years. Working on something you're passionate about is very exciting, and I imagine Tobias feels the same way. But as we discover in this conversation, it can also have its limitations.
It was great at this time because at this time, we also get my first daughter, and as I'm doing working on open source, I was working from home, and so I really have a lot of time to spend with my family and no more traveling to work, or it's easier and more flexible and can work from any time. And it was a great experience, and I think recently a lot of people also experiences Corona and home office stuff. And in open source, you can do what you are interested in. It's not so much about I have to do this, but I don't like it. So it's more like you can basically spend your time on what you think is important for the project, and also what you think is fun. And yeah, you should probably fix some bugs if user reports them, but otherwise you can have a lot of control and being your own boss. It's great.
Yeah, so speaking of which, and you briefly mentioned it earlier too as well, you recently took a job. You took a role to, one, continue to work on Webpack, but after saying all that, like, what was the sort of catalyst of taking a role at Vercel to work on Webpack and the Next.js ecosystem?
Yeah, so one factor was that in the open source community, I don't have so much insight to users' builds and what user did with Webpack. So at Vercel, I have a lot of direct connections to customers and can get their code and can build their code. And yeah, it's more a little bit from another perspective to look at what the user needs are. And I also think Vercel is a great company. They're doing a great job also with open source and Next.js. And I also will be able to contribute to Next.js. So basically my job is Webpack and Next.js and be doing everything together. And maybe it's also a bit, I don't think that Webpack will be forever. It's a lot of other tools coming around and Webpack is getting old. And I don't think it's yet a bad tool, it's a legacy tool. It's more like I probably won't be able to work infinity until I get old. And on Webpack, it's so I also look into other alternatives. And being at a company is that I can involve with the ecosystem and don't be bound to a specific tool.
Yeah, and like if you're looking for user feedback, Next.js has lots of users. And Vercel definitely has a lot of users as well. So it's an interesting take too as well to be able to sort of advance and continue working on interesting problems. Taking a job might make sense to sort of answer a lot of those questions for you.
Definitely. So I already got a lot of insight and worked with customers and about why the tools, the builds are slow or was it broken. I think it's definitely a huge chance for Webpack to getting more stability and also involve where the new user need is. You get a lot of feedback from all kind of customers in the open source community, but it's more from all customers. And at a company, you're getting feedbacks. You know where the feedback is coming. Is it coming from a huge enterprise customer or it's from a small one-off contributor or something like that? And I think you can work a lot of directed into, you get the feedback filtered or weighted with how important it really is. And in open source, all issues are basically the same. And it's not that, is it a real problem or is it just one customer having this problem? And it's a different perspective. It's interesting. And I think both are good, but now I have access to both.
Tobias now has a full-time job. And while it involves working on Webpack, he has to direct his energies elsewhere too. In the meantime, there are new build tools that are mirroring what Webpack is doing, much like how Webpack replaced Browserfly. Will there be something that replaces Webpack?
Yeah, so Webpack was created in a world where everything was in flux and unsure and unstabilized in the web ecosystem. And now everything comes together and getting more stabilized and we're getting the direction of the web. And So there's a chance for new tools to really specialize on the new world or less on flexibility and go more optimized on the stuff where the web is directing to or is stabilizing on. So there's definitely a good chance for other tools to overtake Webpack in that direction. And yeah, Webpack is really old and it's huge and it has backwards compatibility needs and we have to still serve all the old customers. It's always with the time that all legacy tools get overtaken by newer tools. I won't say that this will not happen. It probably will happen. I don't know when, and it's probably also that Webpack will stay alive for maybe 5 or 10 years after that, because all the enterprise customer probably don't upgrade or don't get on the newest hype tool and continue to have old code base or continue to work with the Webpack code base. Yeah, I'm not sure about this future, and I won't deny that there will be a new tool eventually and overtake Webpack, and maybe I contribute to the new tool then after that. Yeah, I think the web ecosystem has a lot of chance to evolve, especially as it's evolving so fast that there are good chances. And now there's a time where these tools can be easily integrated into the web ecosystem. They can be WebAssembly and can be compiled and cross-compiled, and everything is really integrated now. So there are interesting abilities that these new tools can provide. And yeah, let's see.
Now, I mean, your take on the evolution of the web and tools, it's very much in play for a lot of stuff. Like what we're doing with Webpack, we were doing also 15, 20 years ago prior. But we weren't doing it in the same way because the machines, the processors, they were all different. So like single-threaded JavaScript was enough. Now we've got all this new hardware and technology that's going to come out eventually that we'll need to always want to iterate and improve on the situation of being able to take advantage of that stuff too as well. So I do hope that these new tools will have the same sort of user experience that Webpack gave to me. Once I learned it, now I just know it. So I'd love for all these other tools to also have the same experience eventually. Otherwise, I don't see a reason to leave Webpack today, maybe next year. Touching back on the decision to take the full-time role at Vercel and help that ecosystem, what was the thought process and what went to your mind of taking the job, but also your loyalty to Webpack and also maintaining your word, the baby that you created, which is Webpack? And what advice would you have to other maintainers who inevitably will probably get offered a job if the project reaches the success of like Webpack? What advice would you have for them to go through that same sort of thought process?
So Vercel offered me the job, but they also promised me that I can continue working on Webpack and Next.js. And so it's kind of, I definitely don't want to leave Webpack and just do something else. I wanted to continue working on Webpack and getting maybe new directions and maybe a little bit more. Also, I was open to do a little bit or 50% Next.js or Vercel stuff like company stuff or whatever. Yeah, it was a little bit like leaving Webpack, but it was also, I also saw it as my chance to evolve and get new directions and get new ideas. The best idea is to work at a company which really uses your open source project or is really hardly dependent on your open source project. You can continue working on your open source project as part of your company. That would probably be the best idea that I can recommend.
Yeah. This is very much true in the JavaScript ecosystem. And you see a lot of success in the projects that have large backings versus the projects that maybe have a good idea that eventually tend to fizzle too as well. So definitely lots of thoughts and considerations for maintainers who are listening on the future about, or just thinking through the future of their projects. But Tobias, I really thank you very much for sitting down chatting with us about Webpack and your journey into it, but also the next journey that you're sort of currently embarking.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It was great to speak with Tobias Coppers and have him on the README podcast. To learn more about Tobias and his project, Webpack, please visit webpack.js.org. I'm Brian Douglas, and I'm a developer advocate here at GitHub.
And I'm Kathy Korovac, and I work in product at GitHub. The README podcast is a GitHub podcast that dives into the challenges our guests faced and how they overcame those hurdles. In sharing these stories, we hope to provide a spotlight on what you don't always see in the lines of code and what it took to build the technology that inspires us all.
It's been really great spending time with you. The Rebe podcast is a part of the Rebe project at GitHub, a space that amplifies the voices of the developer community, the maintainers, leaders, and the teams whose contributions move the world forward every day. Visit github.com/readme to learn more. Our theme music is produced on GitHub by Dan Gorelick with Tidal Cycles. Additional music from Ray Royale and Blue Dot Sessions. The Rebe podcast is produced by Sound Made Public for GitHub. Please subscribe, share, and follow GitHub on Twitter for updates on this podcast and all things GitHub. Thanks for listening.